delicada também. Tem flores e amores de todas as cores, tem ninhos de passarinhos, tudo isso ela tem.
Stereo music coming on, so you know that means it's almost 7 o'clock here at WMBR Cambridge, and you've come to an hour, an end of an hour of more Stereo. Can you believe it? How'd that happen? You've been listening to myself, Amy Battistiache, and my new bestest of buddies, Claudio Ruiz, who is a local Boston activist type fan of Latin American issues and stuff. And we're thrilled to have had him with us here on the air. We had just another more minute for you to give us a little detail about the plans at Encuentro Cinco for a new kind of cafe. And I wondered if you could tell us a little bit about that real quick.
That's right. Our friend Elisa out of Encuentro Cinco has created this coffee house community club that's opening up within Encuentro Cinco. I'm just going to read this real quick so... it's probably easier that way. It will be a dynamic convergence space for different social justice movements, a place where meetings and presentations are held regularly on a wide range of pertinent topics. You can get more information out of encuentrocinco.org. Again.
Y como siempre, pueden buscar información con nosotros acá en Stereo, mandándonos un email, Stereo, S-P-H-E-R-I-O, @wmbr.org.
Así es. La información que tenemos aquí, todo la podemos encontrar en el sitio de Encuentro 5. En alguna pregunta, cualquier cosa, mándenos un email y estaremos felices de responderles. Una cosita más que también se me olvidó decir anteriormente es de que Food on Palms está organizando un evento celebrando los 30 años de su creación. Food on Palms fue creada localmente aquí en Boston y ahora existe en todos lugares, inclusive en Moscú. En mi ciudad, en Monterrey, existe un local de Food Not Bombs.
Wow.
Impresionante el trabajo que hacen esa gente.
Exactamente. Okay, and that's all we got time for here. Stay tuned for Music for Human Beings. And catch us again next Friday. Same bat time, same bat channel. Ciao.
Ciao.
مرحباً. I'm a doctor جالس السكران, and it is a very strange evening. It's dark. There are a lot of ones in the date. I'm here at WMBR 88.1 FM in Cambridge, and joined on this unusual evening, let's see, initially, and with so many, but initially with Aurora. Aurora is a vocal specialist. Aurora, are you there?
I am.
Aurora, of course, speaking through us without the visual stimulus and with only the sound communication channel.
I find that such an experience is so enlightening. I can feel your bodies and feel your souls without any influence of the visual plane. I can not be distracted by your looks, by your gestures.
I mean, I know that we are very distracting people, but Aurora, your signal is slightly weak.
Well, perhaps I need to slip into a sort of more new-agey feel. At the moment, I'm still transitioning. I drove a car here, I'm afraid.
Let's do that. And while Aurora is transitioning, let's bring on Professor Levine, Mystic Jew. Welcome, Professor.
Hello, and I would like to say that my pleasure in joining you today is...
It simply is.
It simply is.
And really, is there more to say?
Sometimes simplicity is the most effective means of communication.
That does sound indeed very wonderful. This idea that few words can communicate the deepest meaning.
Yes.
Well, it's so good to have you, Professor. We also have with us a guest who is returning after many years, David Talbot, who is an expert on penguin theory. David, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
David, so good to have you back. Where have you been?
I've been in the Galapagos Islands.
Just journeying?
Yes.
It's always a good way to spend one's time to reconnect with the inside.
Now, David, where are the Galapagos Islands exactly?
They move around.
Because I was just in Papua New Guinea a couple weeks ago for a Jewish demonic conference, and I wonder if I was maybe near you.
Possibly. I don't really know how I got there.
Spiritually, I'm sure that there was some nearness.
My main means of conveyance to the conference, as I mentioned, was hand gliding. Not hang gliding.
Hand gliding.
Yes, meaning I glided along my hands.
You glided.
I glid.
Well, again, also, wonderful to have you, Mr. Talbot. We'd also like to welcome for the first time, Shadow. Shadow, welcome.
Hello. Thank you.
And Shadow, your specialty, I understand, is communing with others through... what is it? Joystick media.
Yes, video games, as the kids nowadays call them.
And you know, I can't help but thinking that with a name like Shadow, it's so important that, you know, it may have been easier to commune in the earlier generations of play.
Oh yes.
I mean, I remember communing with others using chess, and how difficult it was, and at the same time one had, you know, accomplished oneself in chess somewhat, you could detect the subtle vibrations in, you know, your opponent and commune with them in a way that words could not convey. So I could feel that similarly, you know, with some of the simpler plays. Like, I recall a game called Ping when I was younger, that was, and you all may also recall.
Yes.
Where the simplicity of the, you know, the entire interface was such that a player could reach facility within days or, you know,
oh yes,
hundreds of hours. But the newer, you know, devices I've seen the children playing with in their way have many buttons and little knobs and handles and sliders and, you know.
Well, many of those buttons and sliders would appear to be extraneous, but they can frequently serve as simply an easier pathway for greater communication with all varieties of spirit worlds.
Mm-hmm. So in other words, communication is not impeded by them, it is facilitated by them.
Oh no, yes, it's facilitated greatly.
Of course, game playing has a very long history in humanity, and one of the earliest known games was the game of Catch-a-Skull, which is related to the modern game of dodgeball, but was played with a human skull rather than an inflated rubber ball.
Mm.
And the interesting thing about this game was that if one were to be hit by the human skull,
mm-hmm.
and one were not to catch it, then one's own skull would then become the next ball for the game.
I see. So in this way, the game would propagate itself.
Exactly, and one would never run out of human skulls for use in the game.
And I recall reading one of the ancient philosophical questions cast in the terms of this game. The question was, so we see how the game is propagated, but how was the first game played?
Well, it's thought that when the divine being, well, this is at least the sort of the myth that was told by these ancient human societies, is that when the divine being, the mother god or the father god or the uncle god in some religions, created the universe, he created it with living beings and a single human skull, sort of primordial human skull to be used in Dodge-a-Skull.
Out of curiosity, Shadow, is most of the meditation achieved through the actual play of video game or through non-physical interactions with other beings, or?
Well, what you have to remember is that you're not, when you're playing the video game, you aren't just interacting with yourself or other players. You are also interacting with the video game itself, which forms a channel for all manner of communication.
Mm-hmm. So there's spirituality not only in the drink, but also in the straw.
Yes.
It's very subtle. I mean, it must have taken a great deal of meditation in your own way, Shadow, to reach these realizations.
Oh yes, many, many levels gained.
Now, I've heard that among today's youth, especially in certain countries such as South Korea and Japan, there's this phenomenon of the shut-in, which is usually a young adolescent male who will shut himself in his room and sort of play these sort of virtual reality-like video or screen games, and they really get so involved in this game, this alternative universe, that they refuse to leave their room. Their mother will have to bring them food, and they'll stay there for weeks and months, and some of them will even sort of die as a result of this prolonged game playing.
Yeah, death is not uncommon among these groups of people.
And they even have developed this idea that when one dies while playing a sort of online game, they actually will go, their spirit will then go into the game and will become an actual inhabitant
another
of that
part
universe.
Of the channel. And in this way, it's similar to every human game from the beginning of time with human skull bone.
So you're saying that every death results in a sort of spiritual, a spiritual footprint or a spiritual manifestation?
I think more of a handprint.
Handprint or a mind print.
Or a fingerprint.
Mm. Or a nose print.
Well, one of my close friends made a very interesting comment today. She said that she thought babies are basically like very large toes. And I thought it was a very profound statement.
The idea that it is a tumorous mass that begins growing in the belly of the female is not a new one.
Well, and infants, I believe, do actually look like toes.
Briefly.
Yes.
Before looking like lumps of meat and then little shrimps and growing into ugly little babies.
Past the larval stage.
Precisely. But there is, for some reason, a great attachment of the female to her toes in a way unlike she would have to a tumorous mass, and an even greater attachment much of the time to offspring.
It has much to do, to be honest, with the sounds that these objects emit. A tumorous mass has a sort of cacophonous sound. It does not resonate well with the body, while the squealings of a child activate our emotional centers that are drawn towards pleasure or towards a sort of distress, where you want to assuage the sound by providing food or comfort. And in this way, rather than trying to kill the cacophony of a tumorous mass, we want to love and
take
care of.
We would like to nurture a tumor.
We would like to nurture a child.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So a tumor that was sufficiently adept at imitating a baby
would prove disastrous.
Because it would consume the mother both before and after removal.
Yes, and then consume those around her.
A contagious super tumor baby.
Well, there is a similar organism which works on the same sort of frequencies as a baby, the same resonances, the same overtones.
Uh-huh, the teenager.
No, actually that the cat, the feline, the domesticated house cat, emits the same sorts of frequencies and the same sorts of sounds as a human child, and that causes us to want to feed it, to comfort it, to pet it. And so in a way, we are slaves to the cat as we are slaves to our children.
Mm-hmm. The idea that one would give birth to something that would consume oneself, it seems like the evolution's trap, that we are programmed as a parasite might program us to feed something that will consume us.
But at the same time, you must remember that that organism that you give birth to is not just another creature.
Mm-hmm.
It is actually yourself.
It's another creature.
It has half of you within it, and half of another being is this melding of two souls and of two imprints.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is this parasite found in nature known as the tupupu worm, and this worm usually embeds itself in flies and spiders and other insects into their body, and it injects a form of paralyzing neuropathogenic poison into the brain of the fly or the spider, which actually allows the worm to control the spider, to sort of control its movement and to move it along as a sort of vehicle, a car or a robot.
So just as one might take the reins and put it on the mouth inside the teeth of the horse and then pull to encourage the horse to, you know, move this way and that, and to break its spirit so that it will no longer throw off the rider, the parasite more subtly, biologically, performs the same function, saying, leap into the water where you will surely die, so that I may live and propagate my way of life.
Yes.
It's interesting, these things, to me, because there are some organizations which are always against animal cruelty, against the idea that we should tie a string to a horse's mouth and force it in a certain direction or kill eagles or something. But at the same time, there are other organisms, other creatures, parasites, carnivores, that do just these exact things that some humans are completely against.
Well, and it's said that some animals even cross-dress. I don't think it follows that as humans we should cross-dress.
Or certain animals will, you know, carelessly spend their money at Waffle Houses. Is this the right move?
Or amass gambling debts of various kinds. I've heard that the male penguin is essentially...
plays board games.
Doesn't wear the pants, let's say, in the penguin relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It's the female penguin who wears the pants.
Which I think we can all agree.
And the male penguin wears more of a tuxedo.
A tuxedo. Well,
Well, the female penguin wears a tuxedo too sometimes.
This is the cross-dressing that Professor Levine mentions. And it's unusual because their base level, the average level of formality in penguin society is quite high. But occasionally we will reach levels of formal protocol in human society that exceeds that level. You know, we have various, lessons I'm sure that you all suffered through as youths.
And funerary rituals, of course.
Precisely, but like how one is, should behave in the company of visiting dignitaries from a monarchy or
a society. These situations are so frustrating to me, to be honest. I feel as though in front of a group of strangers, I should be allowed to stand on a table and scream if that is what I wish, or to do the hokey pokey.
Mm-hmm. The risk
so many
is that
people hide their real selves in front of each other when it comes to these sort of formal equations.
But the risk is that, that if you were to stand in front of me on the table and scream, I would have a reaction like Aurora. That is very unusual behavior, but someone else may respond by saying, I think I found someone who I would like to kill, so the reaction is the issue, that you have not taken the measure of the person before inviting them to perhaps destroy you.
But do you not feel as though if we were all allowed to be ourselves a little more, to react as we wish to react, that perhaps deep down inside everyone would feel so relieved? It's one of the biggest frustrations, one of the biggest forms of stuttering, the causes, to be honest, is when people are not allowed to express themselves completely and entirely, and then their feelings become suppressed, their ideas, their thoughts, their emotions, and they stutter.
Well, my own reaction, I believe, if someone were to stand up on a table and just scream in a sort of primordial way, I would simply exclaim, yes, yes, exactly, yes.
This is precisely the feeling which I was trying to express.
Or a feeling which should be expressed more often. A sort of feeling that undergirds our basic shared humanity.
I think that Professor Levine's suggestion is wonderful, and I think later in the program we should all share in this celebration of feeling.
That'd be wonderful.
But in the meantime, if you'd like to call in and
maybe participate in this,
certainly, then the number is 617-253-8810, and our operator is waiting with itchy fingers.
Such a fun idea, itchy fingers.
Of course, itchy fingers are the ultimate paradox, for one cannot itch one's own fingers, because the fingers are, of course, those that are used to scratch and remove the itch.
It seems like a mild condition in without considering the consequences, but the finger contains dermis, just as other parts of the body, and the itch may indeed invade it like a demon. And
perhaps the gnashing of one's teeth against one's fingers would be sufficient.
Let's bring our first caller in to perhaps make their own statements about fingers. Caller, marhaban.
Hello.
Hello, caller.
I thought I'd call and wish you a happy new year.
Well, thank you so much, caller.
Which calendar is that? Is that the Gregorian calendar?
I believe the Gregorian sidereal calendar. Today is the first day of the new year.
I usually pay more attention to the ancient Egyptian calendar.
Well, it is also the beginning of a new dodecade, which is quite surprising, because both the beginning of the new decade and dodecade, this only happens occasionally. Every 3 decades.
What is a dodecade?
A dodecade every 12 years.
I see.
Caller, how did you celebrate the New Year?
I didn't really. I heard the fireworks at midnight, and then I went to bed. But I was interested in your conversation about itchy fingers, and so I called. And maybe the time, you know, time is an interesting thing, marking of time, calendars. And I heard once that time was invented to keep everything from happening at once.
That's such a beautiful notion.
Well, what would be the harm, though, if everything happened at once?
Well, everything would slide into everything else.
I actually think that time is an illusion that is caused by the formation of history. And as it's peeled off, you know, we sense that time has passed.
Like an onion.
Like an onion, or more like the beginning of the formation of onion rings. So each ring passes by and we observe it. I can think to myself, you know, is today the same moment? You know, have you ever had a dream which was so vivid, but you know, it occurred between the first and the second ringing of the alarm, you know, in such a brief moment?
Yes, and our perception of time is so bent in our dreams. I believe that's because we're accessing a non-physical, a sort of metaphysical plane, that we're not just experiencing physicality and time along one line, but perhaps along a multidimensional stream.
Some say it's the fourth dimension.
I think that was Albert Benigni who said that.
I don't know.
Well, my own marking of these sort of transitional periods has always been fraught with great anxiety. Somehow I have this phobia of passage of one year to another. So what I usually do at these midnight hours when one year becomes the next is I will administer a sort of powerful sedative to my bloodstream, which will knock me out unconscious for maybe 10 or 15 minutes. So I'll administer it about 5 to 12, 5 to midnight, and then awake at about 12:10 next year. And this way, I avoid this kind of uncomfortable feeling of transition, and I just wake up as a new person, newborn in the new year.
Do you have trouble when you cross boundaries or state lines? Because there's really no state lines.
Right. Well, I like to jump over the state lines. So I'll drive my car usually up to the line, keep it sort of moving with some momentum, jump out of the car as the car passes over the line, jump over the line, and jump back into the car.
There was a period in my youth, I think the first time that I saw a political map, when I thought that the earth in the neighboring city was pink.
And did you have little dotted lines in between the states? Dashes?
It never occurred to me that there might be a marker on the border other than the changing color.
Or maybe there's a fence that goes down under the ocean and across to the next country, too. And that could be divided all up that way.
Well, of course, it's well known among geothermal ologists that the waters of the Atlantic and the Pacific and the Indian and the Arctic and the Subarctic and the Mid-Arctic oceans are quite different in their spiritual and chemical compositions. And it would actually be considered highly dangerous for these waters to mix. It could result in some sort of implosion of space and time. So
has to be separated.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, water wants to sort of mix. Gases want to mix. In fact, the tallest waterfall in the world, which I think is in Venezuela, Angel Falls, is about, I don't know, 100 meters high or more. And it's so high that about midway down, the water actually becomes a vapor and sort of disperses. So there's actually no force of water coming down. It just becomes, spreads out into the air like a sort of spiritual force.
Well, and that was in Iceland, near a falls. It was similar to that, and it turned to ice particles in the air.
Is that because it's Iceland?
I guess.
Well, and waterfalls illustrate time in a special way. Do you ever wonder what would happen if time were reversed? Would these vapor particles be able to somewhat mesh back into a flowing water substance?
Oh, I like that concept. What if everything went backwards? I suppose it will go backwards at some time. And everything will go back together again.
Well, they do say that whatever comes down must go up.
Well, it's a beautiful concept to keep in mind when you're trying to connect with other souls along a sort of soul path or soul highway. When you're meditating, I mean, if you think about it, we are all particles. We are all a vapor of the original soul that was enmeshed into one flowing stream.
A vapor of the original soul. And if time were ever to flow in reverse, we would come back to life from decomposing plants and matter and slowly youthify until we become babies and return into our mothers, which return into their mothers, until we become that single glorious whole.
We should be a fluid.
A fluid.
Well, this reminds me of a joke, and I know jokes are often viewed as kind of low and crass, but I think humor is an important element of life, so allow me to just recount this wonderful joke. A man was walking through the graveyard in Vienna, and he noticed sticking out of one of the graves was this big mass of curly white hair, and he noticed it was none other but Ludwig van Beethoven. And Beethoven here had this parchment of musical scores, and he was furiously erasing the score. And so the man said, "Sir Beethoven, what are you doing?" And he said, "I am merely decomposing."
Oh. Wow, that's very funny.
I see why it's considered crass by others.
So.
Well, let's bring another voice in to join with us and to commune and to recompose. Caller, marhaban. Caller, are you there?
Yes, I am here. I am listening to your most beautiful radio show.
Well, thank you so much, caller. I mean, it is only made more beautiful with the addition of your soul.
You are most honorable.
And you are most venerable and audible.
My concern is slight. I know you are beautiful human beings in your souls. Recently, your most beautiful female speaker discussed doing the hokey pokey, and I was concerned because it has recently been brought to the attention of Westerners on this continent that the hokey pokey is perceived by some to be a hate crime.
A hate crime because of the racial issue that it brings to mind?
It is believed, and apparently the Oxford English Dictionary confirms this, that the term hokey-pokey derives from hocus-pocus. And it is a put-down of a religion, a long-standing, most powerful religion revered by many, that believes, for example, that the Almighty, the creator of all, is literally present in a tiny little cookie which its adherents consume.
Well, this is a sort of common belief, and I think that, you know, just rewinding a little, the idea that one should be offended by a term needs, if that were the name of the religion, then no one would be offended. It is only the intention, right? If I was inventing a new language, we say Sekhranese, then and I termed, say, Wiccanism, I called it hokey pokey, If it were the intention of the speaker to disparage the religion with this term, then, you know, perhaps one should take offense. But I'm sure that Aurora was either... Aurora, can you speak to this? Were you aware of the racial connotation?
Well, I had heard of this cookie-based religion, but I didn't make the connection earlier.
So your comment was not intended as an anti-papist comment?
It was intended as a funny dance comment, rather. And it's a dance that we learned as children, where you put your right foot in and your right foot out.
I mean, I personally, as a New Age religious scholar, have always believed in ecumenism, that we should sort of tolerate and venerate and respect all religions, whether they're papist followers or non-papist followers, cookie worshippers, biscuit worshippers, wafer worshippers.
Maybe the other caller is easily offended.
Well, I'm not sure that... I mean, caller, you were not yourself offended, I hope.
No, I was not offended, but I feared that some of our most honorable listeners, viewed discussion of this controversial dance with this controversial name as a put down of cookie worship.
Hmm. Well, to those callers, I meant no offense, and in fact, one of the beautiful things that drew me towards New Age is the idea that we are all accepted, that our ideas, that our perceptions of the world have equal voice, and that I can say, look, this is how I believe in the spirituality of the world, and that others will take me seriously.
And I, for one, can sort of, you know, claim on good authority, good sources, that Pope Benedict himself is, in fact, an avid listener of this program.
Some religions don't allow dancing at all.
I'm surprised to hear about this. It's amazing, after living for so long, how many different belief systems and controversies one can be ignorant of. Are any of my venerated co-hosts aware of these religions?
Well, I'm not aware of the religion that forbids dancing, per se.
I don't think Quakers dance.
Quakers didn't dance originally, no.
There are religions in the south of this most honorable country that we live in, extreme Protestant sects that forbid dancing.
Was that dancing with members of the opposite gender, or dancing in general?
I believe the Bible.
I am not sure, having never attended those.
Perhaps the funky chicken wouldn't be allowed.
Well, I think that's hardly considered a dance. Am I right?
Well, I could say that the Bible itself does describe some form of dancing. I believe it says that King David would dance to the Lord.
Mm-hmm. But that could have been a metaphor.
A metaphor for dancing.
Hmm. But the caller bringing up the funky chicken, of course, makes me wonder if, you know, when I ride public transport in the Boston area, I often, you know, involuntarily sway. And if there were music that happened to be playing, I think it would be regarded as rhythmic movement.
Well, I've often found myself, in particular, that same exact swaying that you've just described. I find myself moving my arms and legs, and then feeling within my body, feeling the music that could go with that movement. And then in that case, I believe it is a dance. I believe any movement of the body with intent to music, or intent to sort of feel a flow or a rhythm or a beat, I believe that can be called dance, no matter how horrendous it may look.
I swim at the Y, and we have music, and I often feel like I'm dancing in the water.
But I think that the same religions that would forbid dancing would probably generally permit other forms of movement. That would be an interesting development.
Well, again, it's
spiritually
about, it's about the intention and about the mental state. If you're feeling music course throughout you, whether or not the music is actually playing in the physical world, then I believe that is a dance, and many religions may have the right to say If you move, it should be to no intent to music.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know, picking up from what Dr. Jala said, this idea that some police systems may disallow any form of movement, that reminds me of this technological phenomenon known as the vacuum bed. And this is a bed which constricts one's movement through the application of a vacuum and a plastic sheet, so that one may not move at all. And it would be interesting for a religion to force its members to sleep in the vacuum bed.
But could that not lead to physical harm through bruising, for example?
Well, right. I assume that even if one has to spend many hours a day in the vacuum bed, one would also have to walk around occasionally to keep the blood flowing. But this idea of having a sort of private dance beat and swimming reminds me, today when I was walking to the station across the MIT campus, I ran across the path of a young woman, and I saw her mouth moving from afar, and I didn't know whether she was talking to herself or not. But then as I approached her, I heard this noise. It was like, and I realized that she was intoning a techno beat. She sort of had this personal techno beat that she was intoning with her mouth and lips as she walked, that was sort of a personal soundtrack, one might say.
Beatboxing, yeah. It's actually, I prescribe that to people with pounding pain, particularly pounding headaches, because if they feel the rhythm of the pain, if they mouth it with their mouths, they can sort of embrace it and envelop themselves in it.
Well, I theorize that she may have had some sort of heart condition which required her to pump her heart through the movements of her mouth. Sort of use her lips as a proxy for the heart muscle to keep it pumping on a regular basis.
I don't know why this reminds me of it, but I remember hearing a Tibetan monk chanting at the Harvard Peace Station. Early in the morning, and he was chanting.
Was that some sort of political protest, perhaps?
I suppose. But it was a very interesting sounding. I also liked the whistling we heard 2 weeks ago. That was a lot of fun.
Well, I think this week the plan is for us to perform a primordial scream.
Oh.
Yeah, the goal is, I'm hoping that we could... you know, now the... How many of us are there? There are 7 connected. We could have a 7-way scream. Hmm. And just some nice 7-way scream therapy.
I believe it's 6 that are not connected.
Oh. Sounds like primal scream.
Yeah, we do have 7, actually.
Well, is the second caller also remaining?
I felt his presence leave us.
It left his
very, venerable,
very honorable presence.
Venerable presence.
Indeed.
That's too bad. But I think 6 is a good number for a scream as well.
Perhaps we must turn down all of the switches if the engineer could do that.
Oh, we'd like to do the scream now. I thought it would be nice if we could close with the scream.
As you wish. I would have loved to illustrate the differences in the stress levels in our voice before and after.
Yeah, if we try a scream now, then we can maybe do a practice scream and then talk about it.
Well, how does the caller feel?
I don't think I have a scream available.
Perhaps a whimper.
Okay.
Excellent. And if any other callers would like to join in and perhaps either scream or moan in any other painful way, the number is 617-253-8810.
But why are we screaming?
We're screaming to release the pressures that are within us from the, you know, from the society, from other circumstances, from the weather. It seems that we do have another caller who's willing to join. Let's bring them on. Caller, marhaban.
Hello.
Welcome.
I'm just hearing your show, and I have a screen that I want to share.
Excellent caller. If you don't mind, perhaps you could turn your radio down so that we only have one copy of the scream.
Okay, love.
Excellent, thank you. So are all of our... Is everyone prepared for a scream?
I'm ready.
I'm ready.
Excellent.
I'm ready.
Should we perhaps stand away from the transmitting microphones?
Let's perhaps do that. So,
and I wish everybody to reach into your soul, into your body, and to feel the scream course through. Use every limb.
Excellent, then. On three, I'll ask the engineer to lower all of the other inputs, and we can perhaps simultaneously scream. All right. One, two.
I feel so much better now.
It was also, I think, nice that we could scream in such a large chamber sounding.
It's a lovely emotion.
Well, I wonder if any of the callers directed their scream against some aspect of the world which they wanted to protest or against an individual.
I don't think so.
In general, when one releases such screams, one releases them in a more general fashion, reaching for not only circumstances in specific, but to feel connected, to feel like their voice is heard.
Well, I know that some people believe that humanity is corrupted. Many religions believe that there was some elemental corruption that occurred in the Garden of Eden. And even many non-religious people believe that humans are essentially immoral beasts who always look after themselves first. Personally, I'm of the persuasion that we have to accept humanity for what it is, which is maybe not perfect, but in its own way, perfect as humanity.
People are generally good. Generally, our morals are somewhat similar. It's just that we cannot always see the best way of achieving happiness and peace.
But if we all were really good and always good towards others, would it really be the same anymore? Would it still be humanity, or would it just be, you know, alien super beings?
I think the healthiest attitude towards others is to be cynical about oneself and to be optimistic about others, if that's possible. So to really identify the patterns of behavior, and so that you can be prepared for them. You know, prepared to deal with your feelings in a quick way.
I wonder how our callers sort of deal with the flaws of humanity. Are they still there?
I think people are generally very good. I sort of blame governments and religions. I think people are great. I don't think I run into problems that anger me so much. I don't have much of a scream left.
So that may be your scream of the next decade, perhaps.
Well, I think that scream we shared was very interesting, though. Shared scream.
Now I wonder if we could somehow link together all of mankind and womankind too, and childkind, and link them together in one scream, holding hands across the globe, whether that would perhaps end world hunger.
Why hunger in particular?
Well, I mean hunger for shared humanity and brotherhood.
Well, it's sort of the idea of assuaging a problem by expressing it, and in that sense, I wonder, Shadow, if you have any experience with, for example, video games that are more violent, do they cause people to be more peaceful, for example, by allowing them to express their violent tendencies and throw them away?
Well, what you need to remember is that conflict is an important part of a video game. You can't have, for example, player versus player combat with only one player combating, then it's just player versus.
Player versus self, perhaps. It's just a futile enterprise. Player versus all.
Yes.
I suppose one could play left hand versus right hand, have one joystick in each of the two hands and have them battle one another for dominance.
One must find within oneself a wish to dominate and to be dominated in order for...
I mean, isn't it like that? Whenever humans fight, isn't it just the right hand fighting against the left hand, since we're all part of the same body?
Or perhaps more evocatively, the right cheek battling with the left, and all of the organs separating the two simply witnessing and unable to, you know, casualties of the war between...
I'm against all this fighting. I really don't think it's good. I think we should bake instead and make a lot of bread and feed everybody, and then everybody would get along.
Competitive baking or using military...
No competition.
But with all the technology, perhaps baking could be, you know, all this technology which has been developed for military purposes could be repurposed for baking. So a nuclear bomb could be used to make the largest...
A nuclear oven.
Precisely. The largest ever turkey could be prepared.
A really big turkey, and feed everybody, and nobody would want to fight with anybody else.
I, for one, would not want to live in a world where all we had was turkey to consume.
Well, you know, we would have rings of turkeys.
Bread.
I mean, chicken.
Bread.
Chicken I approve of.
Because various foods also cook at different temperatures.
It's good to understand the point that the caller is trying to make, the underlying message, which is that we must help one another, that we must feed one another, that we must bake for one another.
Well, what if the other, though, wants to commit acts of violence against others? Should one help them do that?
Well, then it's always good to bake sleeping pills into the turkeys.
No, that's. I think Aurora has a point that one, if I wanted to help the person who was inclined to hurt, I would help him by preventing him from hurting.
I see, by performing some sort of brain surgery, perhaps, to remove part of their brain.
Or
for sweetmeats.
Castration to avoid reproduction.
Imprison the agent of hurting.
I feel it might be worthwhile to interject that I have experienced meditation using several baking-based video games, and it was quite a transcendent experience.
I didn't realize that the realism of these games had reached the level of including a food preparation.
Oh yes.
And how sophisticated is the preparation?
Extremely. In some games, you can go so far as to customize your oven in any of a variety of ways to alter its bread-making properties and so on and so forth.
And I wonder if any game has included the nuclear oven as an option.
Now, is the nuclear oven usually owned by the nuclear family?
I think that would be an ideal use.
Now, this term baked is also used by a sort of subculture, I believe. One could say that they're baked, meaning that they're intoxicated through certain semi-legal substances.
This is true. I thought you were about to mention the possibility that, you know, Aurora is baking the cookies, or the cookies are baking.
Well, that's more of a linguistic observation, but this idea of being baked, meaning relaxed and intoxicated through the use of THC.
Could have
talking
been...
Talking about half-baked?
Yes.
Full-baked, usually.
Full-baked.
Ideally.
And I'd like to interject here. I'm a non-calarian. I don't believe in heating my foods. I believe in eating them cold.
What if the sun heats them?
That's allowed, but... The sun only reaches certain temperatures.
I believe that in the desert one can scramble eggs with the heat of the sun alone.
Well, and the idea of using perhaps a clever arrangement of optical devices.
Well, anything that would warm up food other than the sun, I believe it's changing the food's chemistry.
Mercury.
And so I keep to foods like healthy vegetables, like leafy greens that have been unchanged. For example, vitamin C is completely broken down if you overheat it.
We discussed this about chicken wings or chicken legs barbecued, I think, in a past show, and I'd like to say that I haven't had a single chicken wing since that time.
I mean,
congratulate me if you wish.
No, I certainly would like to. But as a consequence, I hope, of will and not of terror.
Oh, of will.
Excellent.
Yeah. I've heard that the panda bear prefers exclusively to eat bamboo shoots. And I always thought that was a very strange diet because bamboo is known to be one of the least tasty grasses. Like, I think cows enjoy clover. Yeah, but clover and various other types of grasses are much tastier than bamboo.
And I believe that bamboo contains cyanide, actually.
Huh. That's why the pandas are dying.
Well, it grows up for the day, bamboo does.
Possibly.
But I think the pandas spend all their time chewing on this bamboo because it's so poor in nutrients. In fact, the panda cub, it requires 4 months for the panda cub to even open its eyes because the milk produced by the mother is so impoverished in nutrients due to the diet of bamboo.
This brings me to questions of naturalism. Is it good to leave the panda in its state currently and allow it to die out, or should we aid it unnaturally?
We should eat it, you said?
Aid. Assist.
Or perhaps we should genetically modify the bamboo to contain...
Chicken wing.
Or genetically modify the panda to contain bamboo.
Well, I'm sorry, as once again, unfortunately, the Music for Humans loses an hour of time a week. But I would like to thank our caller. Thank you, caller, for being with us once again.
Thank you. Good night.
Ma'a salama. And thanks to all of our hosts this evening, the new host, Shadow, and also to David Talbot.
Thank you.
And once again to Professor Levine.
It was my pleasure to be here today.
It was. And finally to Aurora.
Thank you, Dr. Jalas, and namaste.
I am Dr. Jalas Sakran here on Music for Human, which is New Age Talk Radio with an emphasis on you, here on WMBR 88.1 FM in Cambridge. Stay tuned for Massachusetts Band Response and our final scream. Ma'a salama.
Safety.
Number one.
Cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two.
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three.
Cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four.
Cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians in unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.
Good evening. This is Massachusetts Bay and Response for January 1st, 2010. Here we have the third and final edition of a special project for which we have been reading from the introductory chapter to Gilles Deleuze and Félix Guattari's Thousand Plateaus, Capitalism and Schizophrenia. The chapter is called Rhizome. Recorded here